Charney here. Conversations with my dummy here. And you're here too.
Welcome. Michael Cooney is singing one of my favorite songs, and it's all because he couldn't eat his vegetables, by Peter Berryman. Harry and I are also singing one of my songs, Our Cat, later in the podcast. And I think I hear someone coming in. Must be my dummy Harry.
Harry, what in the world is that?
What? Oh, this, my friend, is a marshmallow.
Oh, rather big one, I must say.
So, what if it is a big one? The bigger the better!
Well, you can't eat that whole marshmallow. You'll get sick.
Who said I was going to eat it?
Well, what else would you do with a marshmallow?
You're kidding. You're kidding. I can't believe you're asking me that. Marshmallows have played a long and illustrious role in the history of this world, Steve. And if you don't know that, then your teachers at school did not do a very good job with you.
What are you talking about? What role? What history? What marshmallows?
All right, what about some of the great quotes in history? Don't shoot till you see the whites of their marshmallows.
Isn't it whites of their eyes?
No, the enemy was eating marshmallows. And I forget who the general was. I think it was General John Paul Jones. He snuck up with his troops, and he fired at will.
Who's Will?
He was the guy who was eating the most marshmallows. Hey, no one's going to steal General John Paul Jones's marshmallows, boy. I can tell you that. He eventually got all of his marshmallows back, by the way.
And it wasn't John Paul Jones. It was William Prescott at the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Or Ethan Hale. I only regret that I have but one marshmallow to give to my country. You see, Stevie was a poor man, and he couldn't afford any more than one. He would have liked to have given two to his country, or even three. But it was not to be. He only had one to give to his country.
Uh-huh.
And John Kennedy. He used marshmallows in his famous speech. Ask not what your marshmallow can do for you. Ask what you can do for your marshmallow.
What can you do for your marshmallow?
You can put them on your stick and roast them over a blazing fire. Mmm, good. Give me marshmallows or give me death.
You know, you're not really doing a great job of convincing me that marshmallows have held such an important role in history.
All right, what about recent history? What about McDonald's? Few people know that a number of years ago, the hamburger truck didn't arrive on time. McDonald's ran out of hamburgers. What to do? They had a long line of people waiting to buy some Big Macs. Then one of those, you know, pimply-faced teens who take your order found a bag of marshmallows under the counter and they started selling them instead. Well, they only sold 10, but it saved the day until the truck came. And to this day, if you look very closely at the golden arches, you know, where it says over 99 billion hamburgers sold, you'll see in small print underneath, and 10 marshmallows.
99 billion hamburgers sold and 10 marshmallows.
That's right!
Oh, man.
What about Julius Caesar?
What about him?
Don't you remember what he said after he was stabbed by Brutus?
No, what?
He turned and said to him, A2 Marshmallow?
He did not. He said A2 Brute, which means, and you, Brutus, too?
No, he didn't. He said A2 Marshmallow.
Why would he say that? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, why should it? He had just been stabbed, for Pete's sake. He was raving. I mean, if I stabbed you and you were going to die in a minute, would you be worrying about getting my name right? What's the difference whether he said A2 Brute or A2 Marshmallow or A2 Frozen Yogurt? The guy was a goner.
I don't think they had frozen yogurt back then.
You know what I mean!
And here in the studio is Michael Cooney.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, the deadpan treatment, eh? Give me the silent treatment.
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Michael Cooney is, you have a wonderful sense of humor, first of all. Let's just get that straight.
Me inspire you, Mr. Beethoven? Ha, 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 ha.
We know a lot of the similar jokes. It's
same
really
jokes.
Great. Yeah. Same jokes. Same kind of. That's why I know you have a good sense of humor.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Michael Cooney has been on the folk circuit for, oh boy, long time, right? Since the mid-60s. I know I've had your albums and been listening to them all those years. A lot of songs that always have just been in my conscious, you know, like came from you, you know, things like the Bankers and the Diplomats and New Grape. I know them all. I think I know that whole album by heart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm a member of your fan club. Michael has lots and lots of songs from all kinds of sources. Part of, I think, your charm is your ability to just find the right songs and learn how to play them. I know that you're connected with one of my favorite songs of all time by Peter and Lou Berryman. Why don't you?
Well, Peter and Lou Berryman, I think they're the best songwriters now. I mean, they're almost all their songs are funny, although some of them are serious underneath. Yeah. But they're almost always funny and witty and interesting, even in the tunes. And this is the first song of theirs I ever learned long ago. See if I still know it. In the squalor of her awful little room, she sat with her grungy cat and her parakeet, with the rodents running round as big as caribou, playing peek-a-boo with her filthy feet, eating donuts with a spoon and drinking Ovaltine through a scum of green floating leisurely in a coffee cup of plastic from the Sally Ann, shaking in her hand out of misery. And it's all because she didn't eat her vegetables. It's all because she didn't eat her vegetables. It's all because she didn't eat her vegetables as a kid. Or maybe didn't chew them properly if she did. Her brother slept behind the shack without a bed, with his battered head resting on his knees, as the roaches and the traffic sang a lullaby, the water pipes would sigh a little harmony, with the stogies he had found wrapped up in cellophane to keep out the rain. When the night was through, he would stumble down the alley picking junk sometimes, or try to beg for dimes on the avenue. And it's all because he didn't eat his vegetables. It's all because he didn't eat his vegetables. It's all because he didn't eat his vegetables as a kid. Or maybe didn't chew them properly if he did. Mother, as a seamstress, never took in much, 'cause she'd lost her touch in a codeine haze. Now she shuffles in a stupor through the city streets, wrapped in ratty sheets from her sewing days. Her crazy little face is hidden in the shade of a hat she made from a cardboard box. The hair that's peeking out is in such need of care, it doesn't look like hair, it looks like dirty socks. And it's all because she didn't eat her vegetables. It's all because she didn't eat her vegetables. It's all because she didn't eat her vegetables as a kid. Or maybe didn't chew them properly if she did. Her uncle had come to see her in his tattered clothes, with a dirty nose and a pint of wine and a bucket full of bullheads he had caught that day on Monona Bay with a handheld line. They would spread a little blanket on the apple crate where they always ate. When they had the food, they would eat and they would drink, and when the grub was gone, they would carry on if they were in the mood. And it's all because they didn't eat their vegetables. It's all because they didn't eat their vegetables. It's all because they didn't eat their vegetables as a kid. Or maybe didn't chew them properly if they did.
Oh, yeah. What a great song. I know. Peter Berryman deserves deserves a lot more than what he has, let's put it that way, for writing great songs like that. And you do it so well. I love your voice. Always have.
Well, thank you.
Such a nice quality. Where was that? That's part Boston and part, well, you grew up in, where'd you
think? Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona. So I guess there's some of that there, too.
California,
Canada you spend?
Yeah.
Yep. And now you're in Friendship Mine.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael Cooney. It's such a treat to have you as a guest on the program,
much.
And thanks for sharing that song for us. Mm. Harry's trying to convince me that the marshmallow has played an important role in the history of the world. I mean, whether it was Nathan Hale who said, "I only regret that I have but one marshmallow to give to my country," or Julius Caesar who, on being stabbed, turned to Brutus and said, "A2 marshmallow."
Well, he was fading fast, Steve. He couldn't remember anyone's name at that point. It was the first thing that came out.
So you've brought in this huge marshmallow, but you have no plans to eat it. I mean, what else could you do with the thing but eat it?
Oh, Steve, there are so many things to do with a marshmallow besides ingesting it. Did you know the World War II would have been over 6 months earlier if it wasn't for the marshmallow?
Really?
Yes, really. You've heard of the Manhattan Project, haven't you?
Of course. That's when all the great scientists got together and created the first atomic bomb.
That's right. But leave it to the bureaucracy to mess things up. Somehow, some memorandum got confused between Albert Einstein and Enrico Fermi, and for 6 months they were trying to create the first atomic marshmallow.
You don't say.
I do say. They were calling it the Marshmallow Project for the first 6 months. It was pathetic, Steve, just pathetic. The great minds of the world huddled out in the Nevada desert, testing the marshmallow for 6 months. Wasn't until Robert Oppenheimer stepped in that they started the real work. 6 months earlier, I tell you! All because of the marshmallow!
Looks like I've underestimated the lowly marshmallow.
You certainly have. Did you know that Edgar Allan Poe once dreamt he was eating a 40-pound marshmallow?
No, I didn't.
When he woke up, his pillow was gone. But it inspired him to write The Telltale Marshmallow, one of the great horror stories of all time!
I thought it was The Telltale Heart.
Oh, sure, after his editor got hold of it. But originally, it was The Telltale Marshmallow. And for my money, a much better story. Bump, 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 bump. This marshmallow just keeps beating away. It's scary. Did you ever hear a beating marshmallow?
All right. But what are you going to do with your marshmallow if you're not going to eat it?
I can't believe you're still asking me that. Did James Whistler, the famous artist, ask what to do with his marshmallow when he painted Whistler's marshmallow?
Wasn't that painting Whistler's mother?
Only after tremendous pressure was put on him by his friends like Oscar Wilde and Aubrey Beardsley to change it. No one's going to want to see a painting of your marshmallow, they kept saying. Paint something that people can relate to. So he looked around and he saw his old decrepit mother sitting there watching television hour after hour and decided to black out the marshmallow and put his mother there instead. It was a crying shame, I don't have to tell you. But if he hadn't, we would be applauding Whistler's marshmallow today.
Uh-huh.
Now, did you ever hear of Johnny Appleseed?
Of course. He went around barefoot with a pot on his head for a hat and planted apple seeds all over the country.
A real nut, right?
Well, I don't think he was a nut.
All right, maybe a nut is a little too harsh. Eccentric. He was eccentric.
All right, maybe he was eccentric.
All right. I don't know if you know this, but Johnny Appleseed didn't think he was planting apples. He thought he had a bag of marshmallow seeds, and he was planting marshmallows all over the country. Marshmallow trees he thought he was going to get.
Get out of here.
I'm serious. Originally, he called himself Johnny Marshmallow Seed. Fortunately, they were really apple seeds. He didn't know. You know what did he know? He wasn't even educated very much. And the rest is history, as you know.
Maybe he was a nut after all.
The marshmallow is a wonderful fruit, Steve. A wonderful fruit.
Time for another commercial.
I promise. I really do. I promise I'll make it short. You don't even have to fast forward through the podcast.
Patreon.com/Steve Charney. That's where you become a patron of the show for $1 a month or less or more. People have actually done it $5, but, you know, just $1. Okay, that's it. See, that was quick, right? Yeah.
We got a cat, she's big and mean.
She don't lick milk, she guzzles gasoline. She likes to drink beer instead of cream. She's our cat.
Well, we got a cat, he's a her.
She don't purr, she just grr. She has steel wool instead of fur. She's our cat.
Well, we got a cat, she's big all right.
She'll rip your leg off with one bite.
Her fur ball's as tough as a meteorite. She's our cat. Well, hey, looky here, what the cat dragged in.
Ain't no mouse, it's a rattlesnake skin. Last week she dragged home Rin Tin Tin. She's our cat.
We got a cat, got sharp claws.
Chews the locks off of cupboard doors. Curses, spits, swears and roars. She's our cat.
We got a cat who likes to bite.
See her scar from her last knife fight.
Hangs round bars till late at night. She's our cat. We got a cat who makes dogs quake.
Likes her belly rubbed with a rake. Her favorite toy is a rattlesnake. She's our cat.
Harry has this gigantic marshmallow that he's brought in, and, well, he's trying to convince me how important the marshmallow has been in playing, you know, a role throughout history.
Well, what can I tell you, Steve? Because of the marshmallow, hundreds of people were saved during the sinking of the Titanic.
Oh, really?
Yes, they ran out of life preservers, but fortunately there were hundreds of large marshmallows on board, Steve. It was some international marshmallow convention. They threw them in the water and used them as flotation devices.
So eating marshmallows isn't one's only option?
Of course not, Steve. I love the marshmallow.
Then why don't you marry it?
Well, I think I will, Steve. The music, please! As I walk down the aisle with my marshmallow, I would ask you if you would do the honors.
It would be an honor to marry you and your fiancé.
Do you, Harry, take this marshmallow to have and to hold? To love and to cherish, to protect from being smushed, until death do you part?
I do.
And do you, marshmallow, take this dummy to have and to hold? To love and to cherish, to hug and to cuddle, till death do you part?
Mm-hmm.
Who said that?
That was me, pretending to make her talk.
The ring, please.
Here it is.
Place it on your marshmallow's, whatever.
There we go, Steve, there we go.
I now pronounce you dummy and wife. You may kiss the marshmallow.
Okay. Lift up her veil and... ah, sweet.
Okay, I admit it. The ending of this podcast was definitely one of the more surreal episodes. Maybe more surreal than the two songs I did in the last podcast about marrying my shoe. But then again, what do you expect when you got a guy talking to a puppet for 20 minutes? Okay, Conversations with My Dummy is written by me, the Salvador Dali of ventriloquists, Steve Charney. And if you want more surrealism, subscribe to it on iTunes, TuneIn.com, Google Play, catch some episodes on my YouTube channel, and of course on Patreon.com/Steve Charney, where you can become a patron of this show. Contact me through my website, SteveCharney.com. Write me an email if you'd like. Always happy to hear from listeners. And on Facebook, search for Steve and Harry, Conversations with My Dummy, and on Twitter, too. And if you like this podcast, you got to spread the word around, man. Spread the word around.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
You got a question for me?
Yeah, I do. What did the 0 say to the 8?
Nice belt.